Hi, Effie Baum. Welcome to Cabu.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Effie Baum is a Portland activist, a resident physician. She's also one of the spokespeople for Portland Pop Mob. I talked to Effie, I think last March, in the early stages of the COVID epidemic. We then discussed mutual aid and how the local Pop Mob in North Portland were making face masks and preparing hand sanitizers. Today we're going to talk about another danger, even worse. That's the danger of Trump getting a second term and what Portland activists are doing about it. And we're going to evaluate the impact of Portland's response and how Trump has singled out our peaceful, sort of peaceful Rose City, peaceful went for the police and troopers. Before we get into evaluating our protests and what we can do, tell us about Pop Mob.
Pop Mob originally formed a little over 2 years ago now, in 2018, in response to all of the violent far-right rallies that groups like Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys were having in the city. And we wanted to encourage large mass mobilizations of the people of Portland to show up and oppose these groups. And then in the time since then, we've had several events. And then with the pandemic, as you mentioned, we were part of a coalition effort with local medic groups working with folks living outside.
Now let's get into the main issue today. We've all noted that Trump first sent troops to Portland to work with police to dominate the streets and stop the thugs and terrorists and anti-fas. He uses Portland as an example of how weak public officials, Democrats, some communistic, have allowed the thugs and terrorists to take over the city, and that could come to you and your beautiful houses and the affluent areas and suburbs. Effie, what do you make of that whole episode in Portland and American life, of Trump's response to Portland?
Well, I mean, it's not exactly new. He did the same thing last year after the rally where Andy Ngo had an unfortunate run-in with a milkshake. He said the same thing back then. This is rhetoric that he has been using for quite a while now as a way to kind of villainize anti-fascist activists and anybody who is doing work that pushes back against the power structure that he does so much work to uphold. There's actually a really funny thing recently where Tucker Carlson, when he was covering the protests, actually referred to the protesters as violent Biden supporters, which was particularly hilarious because I would say that a large number of the people he was highlighting were probably not exactly Biden supporters. But it was hilarious that that is how they were characterizing it, as these violent Democrats, when a lot of us don't actually adhere to much faith in electoral politics. And speaking for myself, I definitely do not identify as a Democrat. But the rhetoric of people being violent, when largely what we're seeing is people engaged in property destruction, and they are characterizing property destruction as violence, I would definitely push back on that characterization. The work of the state to maintain inequality and continue to prop up a violent white supremacist system in which inequality is inherent is a lot more violent than a few broken windows. And the lives of all of the people that have been murdered by the police can never be brought back, but we can wash off graffiti. So the false equivalence of the activities of people that are justifiably angry and the violence perpetrated by the state is, it's absolutely a false equivalency.
You know, Martin Luther King Jr. is credited with saying, violence is the language of the unheard. And the property damage which was happened in Portland was largely confined, it seems to me, to the first night, on the same way after the George Floyd videos were shown and Breonna Taylor and all of the others. It was somewhat like that first night around the country. It was something like Ferguson erupting after Michael Brown, and then Minneapolis erupting after George Floyd. It seems to me that that violence was, and the looting, some of it, of course, done by agent provocateurs, apparently, which is a real problem, but the violence was very minimal and sort of performative. And also the violence directed towards upscale clothing and jewelry store windows is in some ways an attack on the system of privilege.
Absolutely.
Places. But the violence is mostly like performative. It's not against people. But the problem is that the videos, especially when the stuff goes on at night, the videographers get behind a dumpster which was set on fire, and they take pictures then of the police and troops wading in and hitting and people resisting to some extent, like the moms and the veterans here. Those videos, they make it appear that what the police are doing is fighting back in a scene of hellish sort of fires. Because the dumpster fires, they affect the film, and it makes the whole film seem like an inferno in the city. And they use those pictures over and over and over again. And I do wish that people wouldn't set little fires in a dumpster.
Well, I would say that we support a diversity of tactics, so we don't generally choose to criticize the different tactics that people use when we are all trying to fight for essentially the same end goal, which is, you know, an end to a violent system that results in the death of a lot of people and also in upholding systems of inequality that affect people every day. And so I want to be very clear that Pop Mob did not organize any of the events over the summer. We have been very intentional about operating in an entirely support role, supporting the Black and BIPOC-led organizations that were doing the organizing and the events over the summer, because we have a very narrow mission, which is to encourage people to oppose the far right. And so until this last weekend and like the few weeks, month before this, when we started seeing the Proud Boys and the far right groups starting to show up and harass people and shooting into crowds and having their, you know, little Proud Boy event at Delta Park, until that started happening, we had been operating essentially in a entirely support capacity by boosting events and using our social media as a way to uplift the voices of the people doing all of the work. So I just want to make a very clear distinction there. But the groups that had been making the hand sanitizer switched operations in their lab to making wipes for tear gas and pepper spray. So there's a lot of mutual aid efforts that are still going on as well. And I think that is something that does get overlooked when they are characterizing Portland as this den of violence and anarchy, when in fact there's a lot of coalition building and mutual aid efforts that are happening. And it is actually an amazing thing that we have sustained so many nights of protests as a community that, like you mentioned, the moms and the vets, and that the amount of people coming out waxes and wanes, but there's been a continued effort to continue this conversation about the police, and conversations about defunding the police and police abolition have been a part of national conversation in a way that we've never seen before. And that it is largely because of these protests. If it had been something that had happened for a couple of days and then just ended, we would have hit the next news cycle and people would not be having these vital conversations.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, talking to Effie Baum of Pop Mob, a mutual aid organization with ties to the Portland activist left that has been challenging the police and federal government in the streets and refusing to be bullied into silence. It's quite amazing, actually, what's happened. We've so far been discussing how best to challenge the police and troops, and if we should try to control those really angry people. And again, violence is the language of the angry and the unheard. Should we try to control them, and how, in fact? I think there's sometimes it's good to help people see that in the long term, some of the violence is not useful. Although, of course, it is useful to draw attention. If Ferguson hadn't erupted, if Minneapolis hadn't erupted, if other cities hadn't erupted, and there was, in fact, even some looting and a few broken windows, almost no injuries to people. Anyway, Effie, sometimes there is actual violence by our groups, like when the Proud Boys and Trumpies come to Portland to martyr themselves and build their movements. Sometimes the Proud Boys have succeeded in making spectacles of violence, and they provoke it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there actually watching them do it. They do it right in plain sight of the police and others. Anyway, I think sometimes we shouldn't be responding to them, being very determined, having very large crowds on our side, but maybe not engaging them physically.
I think the false equivalency that gets drawn between the right and the left when it comes to these violent altercations is that there's violence on both sides. And I would argue instead that you have one group that is attacking vulnerable people, whether it's based on race or sexual orientation, or they're trans or they're immigrants. And then you have a group of people that say, no, we're not going to allow this, and that we are going to stop you by any means necessary. And we are going to do what we have to protect our neighbors and our friends and our families. And comparing community self-defense to a violent threat is two completely different things. They do come looking for violence, and they are met with community members who are willing to put their own safety at risk to protect the other people who can't do that work. We see the folks that do that as our front lines. And honestly, we could not be out there having protests and demonstrating. And for those of us that don't have the capacity to be in the front lines, we wouldn't even be safe to show up without those folks doing that to provide that line of defense for us.
I think
so. That's
you're
the
right.
First point that I would make.
We have to see it in terms of community self-defense, particularly when they come in provocatively and threateningly and show their weapons. It seems to me it's very important to challenge them. They cannot be allowed to roam indiscriminately in the streets.
And when you said that maybe we shouldn't engage with them in that way, what we have seen, in fact, is that if you just ignore them, that they will find targets. And if they do not get the conflict that they are looking for, they will go looking for it. And, you know, we saw this in May Day of 2019 when it was not a march that year downtown, but there was a group of far right people from an organization that's trying to call themselves Patriots United, but then there's also a contingent of Proud Boys that day that showed up expecting the typical May Day march and wanting to attack the quote unquote communists and defend Portland. But instead, what happened was a labor rally at a park in Northeast. And so instead, they waited for after that, when all of the organizers and people in the community had a after party event at Cider Riot, where there was bands playing and people tabling and people like hanging out on the patio, drinking beer and eating tacos. And then they came and just violently attacked all of the people that were just hanging out at this bar because they did not get the fight that they were looking for earlier. And so this idea that they will just go away is time and again does not pan out. They will keep looking for a fight. And if that means that they are attacking vulnerable people, then that is something that needs to be pushed back against. And the rally this last weekend is also another good example of that. They had people patrolling their perimeter with baseball bats. And you compare that to the rally that we had in Peninsula Park, where there was people giving out food and making things, and there were speakers and there was music and such a display of like community and unity and mutual aid, and the sharp contrast between that and a bunch of men with baseball bats and shields. And there was a video of one of them attacking a journalist and kicking him in the face. And that journalist ended up having to go to the hospital. And I don't see the outrage around that we saw around when Andy Ngo was attacked last year. This guy isn't getting a GoFundMe raising $500,000. And he's not on every news station across the country right now. That video is horrifying. And I would argue it is way more horrifying than what happened to Andy Ngo, but it's not getting the same level of attention. And it's that whole if it bleeds, it leads thing. And there's definitely a propensity of the media to only pay attention when there is an altercation and rampant violence. And the fact that we had a very well-attended and largely positive community event on Saturday barely made ripples because it did not have the if it bleeds, it leads drama that the media loves to portray.
I guess the next test is going to be probably on election day and election night, and then the aftermath of the election when Trump and his followers decide that the election was rigged against Trump and they are going to maybe force the issue into the Supreme Court that Trump now owns. It's a serious threat, it seems to me. We can't talk about it today, but people are organizing across the country to deal with it. You'll hear more about that on this Old Mole show and on KBOO. Effie, maybe we can talk another time about how to respond to Trump's people who will be in the streets on election day trying to intimidate people from voting. That's coming up. Effie Baum, really good talking to you again.
Great talking to you too, Bill.
Keep up your various areas of good work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Right, so long.